You are listening to Seek Purpose, the podcast, where guests share how they have survived their pain, explored their passions, and found their purpose.
We are the platform that gives a voice to journeys of recovery and the opportunity to get inspired by those who have overcome their hurts, habits, and hang-ups.
You've found your pathway to recovery. Now it's time to find your pathway to purpose.
Subscribe to the show, join our online community, and become a purpose seeker today.
I just want to say, I am so impressed with you, Brooke and Suzanne, for what you have done here today. I am so inspired by the last eight people that have been on sharing is really, truly amazing. And I've been sober a long time and I'm just feeling like I feel this little buzz going like, wow, that Pop and Cynthia and, you know, all of them and Alexandria and Jessica, Michelle, they were all just so, so good. So thanks. I'm delighted to be here.
We honestly, you know, something, if you're in looking in, if you're in recovery, honestly, this is really, I'm a 12 step girl. This is higher power. I don't know how much.
Yeah.
We've had not much sleep. Two moms that have kids, and I love what Brooke has. What do you say? I mean, during the beginning segment, we had Annabelle coming in and just like life on life terms, right? I tell you.
But met Elise, and I just met Elise too, like about 2 weeks ago on Clubhouse. And I'm so sorry that, and I saw your opening about, you know, sending out prayers for her. So Elise, if you're listening, I just big hugs. I'm, you know, really everybody, of course, pulling for you to get through this quickly. And this too shall pass.
Yeah. So let's just get started here. We have a couple of amazing panelists here. I mean, all of our guests are just stars, honest to goodness. And I'm just so excited about this particular panel because, you know, all of us being in recovery is important, but we really want to talk about the family and the allies and the supporters. And Shalu, who is from Uplift Wellness, helps individuals with wellness strategy and accessibility. And of course, Maureen, I mean, your long-term recovery, but let me tell you, you know a lot being in recovery of family, the effects of, and I thought we should talk about that today because, you know, it is not just about the person that's just in recovery. So why don't we start off with Maureen first to kind of address the family and the supporters and the allies.
Okay, Suzanne, that's so funny you should say that because like, you know, my family is super supportive. I got sober when I was 24 years old, but my whole platform and everything I talk about is about leadership and work. And you're like having me talk about family. I'm like, what? Oh no. I'm laughing because I'm like, okay, so my family is truly amazing. They're not a bunch of alcoholics. I was actually raised in a very loving, supportive family. When I was 12 or even 11 years old, we had a fire in our house at night, in the middle of the night. I was actually babysitting next door. And my father came over. He had third degree burns on his hands and his feet trying to pull this burning couch out of the house. And he needed to use the phone to make sure that my sister, who was babysitting across town, you know, because hadn't gotten home yet. And I'll tell you, it was devastating. My parents had 6 kids in 8.5 years. I'm number 3. And that's called like Irish Catholic, right? So we grew up in a really tight knit family. But, you know, what do? When we're teenagers, we break away. We have to break. That's like our job, right? We have to break away. And so I didn't know who I was without my pack. Like I had to figure that out. And of course, when I was growing up, everything was just sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So I got into that. But I truly believe that the reason I got sober so young and the reason that I never tried to kill myself, because I had moved 2,000 miles away from home because I figured the reason I was so fucked up was because of Connecticut and, you know, whatever. My father was an alcoholic, but I'll tell you, he was a mild-mannered, loving, gentle man. He just wasn't there emotionally. He was just escaping, right? So anyways, I moved away and then I got sober in Austin, Texas when I was 24 years old. And the reason I never tried to kill myself, I'm sure, was because my parents loved me so much. And even when I was totally out there in high school, barely graduated, skipping every freaking day. My, you know, they'd say, well, we're going to call your parents. Thank God we didn't have cell phones back then. It's all I can say. Then they would have been able to find me. But I said, don't call my parents. Like, this has nothing to do with them. Like, I was that kind of adamant. But I'll tell you, my mom got into Al-Anon, and my dad, he tried to get sober. He was kind of a binge drinker after that. But I'll tell you, there was just always so much love. And I think that that's why I got sober so young, because I couldn't blame it on them. I had to take responsibility for it early on. And I did. And I got sober when I was 24. I created an amazing career. I've been married for 33 years. I have, you know, a lovely daughter. She gave me 4 grandchildren under, they're all like 6, 5, 3, and 1. And yeah, I am having a blast with them. So there's so much, you know, when there is love, there's love. But I'll tell you, having space for other people in the program who share their stories, family has not always been there for everybody. There are some people who really need to separate from their families. And I'm just so, so grateful that I didn't have to be one of them, that it's really been good for me. And that's probably why I got sober so early, so young.
Oh, well, thanks, Maureen. Maureen also is really big on Clubhouse. We talked about that earlier in the beginning of the show, talking about, you know, another platform, I know, but this one's a little, might be, you know, kind of an ease in, because you don't have to come on screen. It's not Zoom. It's only audio. And there's some really amazing connections you can make on every topic, honestly, not just recovery, but for family support, for if you want to build a house. I mean, shoot, they've got everything on there.
Everything. It's like, yeah.
Pinterest on audio, I tell you.
Yeah.
But anyways, Shalu, an incredible ally. What you are doing, the commitment that you have to be able to help, please share.
Oh, man. Well, one, thank you for having me. And two, Maureen, thank you for sharing your story. And you touched light on a lot of important factors. So I'm a clinician, and I'm about to graduate as a registered psychiatric nurse. So I'm transitioning from counseling to psych nursing.
And family, congratulations.
Huge, thank you. Family is a huge component towards their recovery, whether it's blood family or chosen family. It's an important protective factor that I really like to integrate with the people that I work with. It's recognizing, you know, their right to belong. It's part of our basic needs. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We deserve to belong. We're social creatures. And finding where we belong can be tricky, and it can take us down paths that we don't deserve to be in. But connecting continuously and consistently and having a reach out makes a difference. And so this is the first time I'm saying it out loud on a forum, but I like to identify as an effective sober ally. And I've been in Al-Anon since I was in grade 11, and nobody's known that until now and today.
Wow, good job.
Thank you. And so, oh God, I lost my train of thought. So going back to what it is like, how to be an effective ally, I made my dumb choices. I did things that I should have thought twice about. I did things that were against the principles of Al-Anon for myself. And I learned the hard way. And one of the biggest things for me to become an effective sober ally is recognizing the consistency of being able to reach out. Nobody chose addiction. Nobody woke up one day deciding consciously, like, okay, I'm going to give my hand, my life over, hand my power over to addiction and see what it happens. Like, that's, nobody wakes up consciously deciding that. And so the trust can become very confusing as someone remains in addiction or an active addiction. And so having to reach out is a huge component for myself, and putting in the work and consistently reaching out. And that's a big bridge that can help eliminate the stigma and have that dialogue, that productive dialogue of inclusivity. The recovery community is a community, just like any other community, whether it's South Asian, LGBTQ, it's a community that deserves to be valued, respected, and dignified. And it deserves everything to be included within society. It deserves its rightful inclusion. And as a sober ally, I've made it my professional mission to spread the word however I can, and educate and empower and enlighten however I can, wherever I go, what it means to be inclusive, so we can give the recovery community a safe, supportive environment so they can feel comfortable and brave to reach out and get the help they deserve.
Mm. Good. Well said.
Thank you.
Oh, you're on mute. On mute.
You know how many times I've had that happen today? You're on mute. Oh my gosh. Anyways, Maureen, is there anything?
Yes. Because what you were saying, Shilu, is so important. And that is, and what you said earlier in your broadcast, Suzanne, that we can't hide anymore. We shouldn't hide anymore. We clearly have an opioid epidemic. We have a I don't want to feel epidemic, right? Yeah. Don't we? What are we doing? We're popping pills. The freaking pharmaceutical industry is going crazy. It's making billions of dollars because we just are trying not to feel our feelings. And we, meaning Americans, or humanity as a whole, I would say. And I think that when you get into recovery, like I know there's a lot of people that here that are young, and I got sober young too. And I was in that place, right, where it was so exciting and here's how you do it. And here's what we do for fun and everything. Well, like I'm a grandmother now, you know, but I still ride my motorcycle and I still go out and I have a lot of fun. But I also believe that you can have an awesome career. If you get sober, whenever you get sober, once you're solid in your sobriety, you're not just trying to do it day to day, the skill you learn in recovery have everything to do with leadership. And we don't see ourselves as leaders. And there's a lot of people out there who are leaders in recovery, in their communities, in their jobs, maybe their supervisors or managers, and they hide because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have 36 years. And so for a long time, I was afraid to speak out. Oh, I don't want people to know. That's like a tradition, you know, but now we need to show people that we can be leaders, that we're reliable, that we're dependable. We have honesty and integrity. We know how to build trust. We're great listeners. We're empathetic listeners. We're credible. Right? We're competent. We think clearly. We come in without hangovers. We're on time. We have humility. We take initiative. Those are just some of the things that jump to mind. Not to mention, we know how to love, right? We have big, big hearts and we really embrace people. And we also have really good bullshit detectors. We can tell when somebody's BSing us and we set good boundaries. So all of those qualities make really excellent leaders. And I've been training in leadership for about 7 years now. And I'll tell you, there are a lot of people out there, they don't freaking get it. They don't get it. And yet, you know, they come to class and they're like trying to learn. Oh, how do we do that? Well, you got to like care. You got to get to know people. You got to be a people person. You got to value diversity. And, you know, we do all of that when we get into recovery because we work on these things and we listen to each other and we help each other and we support each other and encourage each other. And all of those things just translate so well. So I just really wanted to get that message out for anybody who's listening. If you haven't considered it, step into leadership. My Clubhouse club is called Recovery at Work, and I also have it on my website, and I have a podcast. I wrote down a lot of names here about people who are on your place that have podcasts. Suzanne, I'm interviewing you actually tomorrow. I think you're on my calendar for tomorrow. You're going to be on my podcast
Monday. It's called... I'm sleeping tomorrow.
Oh yeah. No, Monday. It's only Saturday. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's called Emerge, Evolve, Lead for people in recovery. And I've had also people who are not addicts or an alcoholic. Like I've had other people like you, Shilu, too, who talked about being raised in a family of parents who are addicts. And recovery is recovery. No matter what you're recovering from, you still get the same skills and the same big open heart that all of us do when we finally get it and we realize we can live life on life's terms. And it's so much better. Like, I love that guy, the sober is dope pop. He really had it rolling off his tongue about all of the fun things that you can do in sobriety. And so it's true. It is absolutely true. And I'm delighted to share that.
Yeah. And I just wanted to echo on Maureen's comment about that leadership. So I'm at one of my clinical placements right now for my nursing program, and I'm at a treatment center right now for addictions. And that's a huge piece of focus when it comes to the psychosocial rehabilitation process. That's the cornerstone of recovery principles in nursing now. We finally are seeing it in the medical field, in the health field. And we're starting to bring it out to practice, and we're trying to shine a brighter light to it. And a huge component of that is educating our clients, our community-based clients and patients, the value of autonomous leadership, what that means, how to develop those skill sets. And a lot of it is coming down to having those conversations on how you can rewire your brain cells.
Yes.
And meditation is like just this much of a component to everything else. And having that realization that other variables that may influence and impact their road to recovery are just little pieces, but at the end of the day, they are the heart of their recovery. Whoever is in recovery, you are the heart of it, and you can make what you want out of it. You always had it in you. It's just, you're finally climbing out of the fog, and I'm here to hold my hand out and reach out and be like, if you ever need to talk, you need resources, I'm here. No judgment, no nothing. How can I revive the leadership that you lost?
Yeah, because you know, there's this whole thing about we have our personality now.
Yeah.
And we're not just self-centered anymore, right? Yeah. So as you're really trying to give to other people, and that just feels just so warm, honestly, when you really get people. So yeah, I love that. And building those relationships. I'm so glad to hear you say that, Shalu, that that's happening in the academic world now too.
I'm very good. I'm more proud to be a student than I am right now. And I've been saying this for a whole week, like what a time to be alive, especially going into psychiatric nursing. We're starting to move away from like the medications and everything, because that opens up a whole other can of worms if it's not supervised. And it's not a secret. The health authority is somewhat of a broken system that has room for improvement. It's a process. But when we have people like us banding together, the process becomes easier and the process becomes more natural. And when we have this cohesion, we can set a solid infrastructure for people in recovery. And it comes back to our theme that we started off this panel with. Everybody in the recovery community is part of a community that deserves its rightful dignity. We need to step up, do our parts, and to all the sober allies out there, keep up your hard work, be there for the people you love. You never know who you're going to cross paths with that you're going to transform their lives, and reach out with love and kindness, keep up the hard work, and let's just support people to lead healthier, happier, better lives that they deserve. Yeah.
Amen. You know, I don't know how many times I've been to celebrations and we celebrate our sobriety, and the families come, you know, sometimes not, but usually there might be one. But as you watch them, you know, stay sober, there's more and more come each year. But I know they all sit there in the first year going, why do they get a damn cake? What about our reward? And if you're out there and you're one of those allies looking at, you know, someone that's hurt you really badly, if you're a child, if you're a mom, a dad, a grandparent, anybody that's been hurt by somebody in addiction, I really urge you, because that's healing in itself. That's needing some attention. You're important. You will discover, like I've discovered from being, you know, I'm a mom of a teenage alcoholic, and even being in recovery, I had to go and get myself extra help in regards to dealing with those hurts, because, you know, those individuals that are using are, that's why they say it's like a Jekyll and Hyde, you know. We got to work through those. So there's lots of resources on Just for 24, also the Seek Purpose. I know Uplift Wellness does a phenomenal work with anybody that is an ally of somebody or effects of somebody who is in addiction. I know Emerge Leadership Academy does some really wonderful work as well, teaching people to kind of embrace their greatness of leadership. And so thank you so much for you guys coming today. We, I wish there's more time. I keep saying
that. I think you caught up though. I think you caught up. You were a little behind an hour ago, but you're catching up now.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I don't know if my clock's off or Brooks is off, but I mean, I've got 3:56.
That's where we're at. I just want to take a moment to mention what's happening in the comments here on the live. There's people connecting with resources and sharing information with each other. And I just think it's the most beautiful thing. Like, who would have thought this would be how we're connecting with each other. I cannot wait until this is a live event and we can have you guys all on the stage. This is just so incredible. I can't believe what we're doing. And we have a prize giveaway. So we're doing Brainwashed Coffee Prize Pack, which is huge. There's like stickers and a t-shirt and Brainwashed Coffee, which has hilarious names all around recovery. They do support recovery nonprofits with their brand. So go check them out. And the winner is Jess Curley. You are cleaning up. I cannot believe it.
Oh my goodness.
She guessed the number.
You guys have to get into these comments. Wow. Amazing.
I know. A lot of people were trying for that one. That was a really big prize pack. And oh my gosh, Shelly, I was so glad to see you. And really, really great to meet you, Maureen.
Thank you so much for having me.
I love our chats on getting to hear you on Clubhouse. And it's a really great app if you guys are looking for connections. So go check that out. Okay.
Thanks, guys. Don't forget.
Thank you.
Instagram, their covers, their superstars, all their informations and contacts are on there. Giuseppe Gansi, Talk Recovery Radio, and Darren Galler. Giuseppe, I mean, we said this earlier that he is an inspiration for myself of watching him from afar over the years, participating in so many events that they have done, total ally of everything he stands behind. And Darren, of course, what you guys do at Talk Radio, you guys have been doing this stuff well before, as I said, I even knew what a podcast was. But Giuseppe is a director of community development at Last Door Society. He is also a board chair at Recovery Day BC. And of course, a co-host. Now I'm not lying. Now you all know from the US, you're thinking 22,000 people showing up for recovery. Fuck you, Suzanne. I'm like, yeah, there it is right there. So, sorry, I shouldn't have said fuck you. I love you all. Anyways, welcome, you too.
Well, here. Awesome. Thank you for having us. Hey, Darren. Hey, bro.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Yeah, this is awesome. Like, I mean, what a great hashtag. What a great idea. I just want to like say, you know, a big shout out to the people. Like, we talk a lot about people like down and out. They need to help. It's obvious. But there's so many people that just need a little nudge, need a little inspiration, you know, might not, you know, need to go treatment and do all of that. That just, and these little one day events, Matt, like such a great little influence, a great idea.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we're blown away. I can't believe what's happening, honestly. And yeah, like Suzanne said, we're really inspired by what you do, especially Giuseppe with recovery days and stuff. And we'd love to get the word out about that. What do you guys have planned for this year with the, well, actually let's start with introductions first and then we'll get into what I want to know.
All right, sure.
Yeah, we always are futurizing us, you know, people in recovery. It's always what's happening tomorrow. We're into today, so.
Darren, go ahead, go first.
Introducing myself. Well, I'm Darren Galler. I am a co-host of Talk Recovery Radio. We started a radio show 7 years ago on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM, and we've been talking to professionals and you know, people in recovery and their personal stories and authors and like just the gamut of solutions out there and people under this, you know, umbrella of just, you know, like just making change in their life, wanting to be a little bit better. And so, I mean, I've been inspired by it. I used to work in treatment myself. Five years ago, I became a stay-at-home dad and stayed with Giuseppe because the show means everything to me. And I've been honored to be able to MC Recovery Day. Yeah, I think
for how long, Darren? Year, yeah, long
since
time.
It began when it was like 100 people downtown Vancouver. You know, we had our signs and, you know, comedians and people playing music and just trying to spread the word. So to see it like just behind Giuseppe, like how it became something like that, where it involved the whole community, like even if you weren't going there and you just like you heard the noise and you pop by, like, you know, what's going on here? That question, like, what's happening here? Like, that's a big deal because there's like thousands, tens of thousands of people maybe loaded in recovery, checking it out, family members. Like, what a great gathering. It's just something to be a part of. It's amazing. That's me.
Giuseppe, you got to take it over. Now you guys understand why we're closing the show with these two, right? Okay. I'm just saying that right now.
I do a couple of things.
Just a little bit.
It's been a really busy day, which I'm sure you've seen on Facebook in the last 24 hours. We'll talk about that later. Yeah. You know, I like to wear a couple of hats. My main job is I work for a place called Last Door Recovery Center, and it's a youth and adult addiction treatment program. You know, saves a lot of lives, and I do their community development. We're a unique organization. We do lots of community engagement, and it just keeps the idea that recovery is possible, attainable, and sustainable. And we just inspire new people to want to come here, and we inspire our guys, like, life is amazing when you get clean and sober. So let's do this. And to do that, we need to do stuff. So, you know, that's what started Clean, Sober, and Proud, which is one of the world's largest sober events during an official Pride event. It's not like this off the side AA dance that goes on in some place. It's like an actual Vancouver Pride event. It took us a lot of work to get that designation. And it started off small. Couldn't even get 80 people to go to it with free tickets. Like, it's just like, I don't want anyone to know I'm sober. And it was really weird. And it's turned into, you know, this huge outreach event and a street party called Intoxicated. And the crowd's huge. So that's a lot of fun. And it really, at the heart of that was always, I remember being I was young when I went to my first Pride. I was like 16. I remember being 16 years old and going to Pride and not seeing anything that had anything to do that didn't involve liquor or drugs. And trust me, I did a lot of liquor and drugs at the age of 16. And you know, at that time it was a really good time, but the goal always was to have this vision of something different. And, you know, a few years ago we got that, and it said Clean, Sober, and Proud at the corner of Davie and Butte, which is, you know, the center of the gay village. And that's probably the best part of everything, plus all the stories. So I do Clean, Sober, and Proud. Darren and I do Talk Recovery Radio, 7 years of shows, hundreds of guests, thousands of listeners. I'm the chair of Recovery Day BC, and voila, that's turning to a story about Recovery Day that I like to share. We couldn't even get 20 service providers to get together and be part of Recovery Day. At 2019, our last in-person event pre-COVID, we had 150 information booths. I mean, that didn't just happen. Like, people weren't like, hey, I want to go to Recovery Day. Like, we had naloxone training, abstinence programs, religious programs, CBD programs, controlled alcohol drinking programs, all in one space. And I'm saying that because we're going to talk about the petition in a bit. It took years to get us all into one space, and that was a lot of work, and it was beautiful. Like, people had to build trust to be like, hey, I remember the alcohol drinking program, are you sure you want us there? And it's just like, well, some people get well with controlled drinking, like, if you can drink, go ahead, if you can't, stop, you know. So that was a really big deal. And just remember the story. What else do I do, Darren? My recovery plan. We are launching a movement. Go to the website, myrecoveryplan.ca. We want every Canadian to get their recovery capital assessed in Canada to help them overcome addiction. This idea of just treating addiction physically with medication and psychologically with medication, you know, your doctor understands your addiction, was a big ad campaign in the States for years. That has to stop. We have to stop that. We need to deal with the whole person. The doctor is very important, but he's not at the top of the pyramid. We need doctors, holistic approaches, everything all on the same level, because it's the entire person that needs help, including family. And that's what building recovery capital is all about. You know, I got introduced to that 4 years. We started the Recovery Capital Conference. 7,000 healthcare providers have attended in the past 4 years. And this year we launched the software that measures recovery capital. So if you're listening and you're like, what is that? It's the new harm reduction. So please visit it. And we are hoping to have 100 treatment centers using my recovery plan by the end of 2022. It will be the world's largest research project on bed-based services ever taken on how we improve health outcomes with people that are bed-based services. And a little intro to Better App, launching a new app probably next week. It's called Better, and you can go to betterapp.ca to see a preview of it. It's an overdose prevention tool where you can have peer monitors assist you if you're using drugs, but it's also a recovery app where people in recovery, both harm reduction and recovery worlds in one space helping each other. And the goal is people that are still using drugs, if they use this app, they will be introduced to some hope on the recovery walls, but also people in recovery relapse. And this is a place where they can stay connected to the recovery community and maybe have somebody who's volunteering in the app to be their peer monitor. So take a look for that. That's coming out. What's going on for Recovery Day and all that this month?
Last year you guys totally just pivoted and created this incredible online party. Like, it was just so
it was fun.
Cool.
It was a lot of work.
I can't imagine. Yeah. Oh my God, it was amazing.
We had Malcolm Moore, yes. You know, with his courageous story. Nobody knew that he had relapsed. And he's like, Darren, you tell the story. I mean, it was beautiful. You were on stage with him.
I mean... it's not what you plan for, you know. We were expecting, you know, this entertainer and this, you know, celebrity in that sense, right? To, you know, because he's got influence, right? And people listen, and you know, we started talking to him, and I was kind of looking like where is he sitting, you know? And he was sitting bedside, you know, like just. And he was about to go onto this story, you know, around his truth. And, you know, he just said, you know what, like, it's moments like this where people need to hear the truth. And he got vulnerable. And I mean, I remember lighting up, like, just the courage and the risk that it took and what it would have done to somebody that was as afraid, you know, to say that I've been struggling, or to say that I relapsed, or to say, you know, that I need help and, you know, I messed up. And, I mean, any type of situation, that allows for that, I mean, you can't even plan, but you just hope, like, you know, like this, like, you just hope that someone out there that has been quiet and depressed and lonely and wondering all of these things, like, that you don't just have to go, you know, to treatment, or that you don't just have to, you know, do these specific things, because that's what I did. It's just like, here, just question yourself, you know, has it been enough? Like, we're just going to do it for a day. Can we just do it for a day and, you know, share our stories? And yeah, like, every day has been amazing and fun for me. I spent today ripping around a rainy go-kart track with my 5-year-old beside me, you know, like, I didn't think that, like, I'm doing this for this show. It's just something I do now, yeah. You know, but I thought about us, and I couldn't get my video out to film us, but, you know, like, that's what I get to do. It's so far from, you know, being stuck and loaded and, you know, hurting and all of that, like, just being able to be present. So it's a gift.
Yeah. That's incredible. And you're going to be speaking at Mother or Father's Recovery Society as well, right? Or Dad's Recovery Society, I think it is.
Yeah.
I'll get the name right one of these times.
There's so many amazing groups out there. It's wonderful. So right now we've got planned Recovery Month in September.
Yes. Let's talk about that.
We don't know. There's COVID. So we've got in-person events, we've got hybrid events, and we've got just virtual event plans. And we just don't know what to kill on, you know, do the kill switch on and the go switch. Hopefully by the middle of June, you know, we'll know a little bit more what's going on. And you know, thankfully we've got some experience, you know, putting these things on, so we can do it. We just don't know yet. Pride does have some events planned. We plan on doing a Clean, Sober and Proud event in collaboration with the Vancouver Pride Society. They're doing these events in parks all over the city. So instead of everybody congregating in one space, everyone's spread out. So you can go to vancouverpride.ca for information on that. And we'll have some updates on cleansoberandproud.com with what we're doing and where we are. So that's still being worked out. So we're trying to do the best that we can, and we'll have some information. So recoverydaybc.ca is the website you can go for what's going on for Recovery Day and all of our Facebook pages. But it's difficult times to create that energy of unity during COVID. But something miraculous has happened when like through online, we've been able to maintain that. And I was talking to a friend the other day who isn't in recovery, and she just thought, you know, that we were all really struggling. And I said, you know what, like, we're there for each other. Like the treatment center I work at, like, you know, they don't know the 300 person meetings I used to go to in New West. They got their own recovery journey that they love. And it's just, recovery can happen when you're looking for it. So that's amazing. And, you know, I can't not want to, like, I have to talk about what happened in the last 24 hours, if I may. Mm-hmm. We launched Recovery Day BC, launched a petition yesterday. It's got about 700 signatures, I think, in less than 10 hours or so. It's really important. Go to recoverydaybc.ca. And there is a link so you can find it, because the petition web link is way too long. But recoverydaybc.ca. And I've been on stakeholder meet. I've talked to you guys about this on shows before when I was able to be on your show a long time ago. And, you know, in the world of social media, people think I'm crazy. Sometimes it's like, oh, you're a conspiracy theory. It's like, no, I'm telling you, there's this underground narrative happening in healthcare when it comes to addiction, that bed-based treatment is the evil predator, and that treatment doesn't work. And the only thing that works is safe supply, harm reduction. And everyone's like, oh no, that's, you know, we support each other. And I'm like, no, I'm telling you, man, I go to stakeholder meetings. There's something, you know, like the abstinence community who did a lot of harm years ago saying harm reduction didn't work. And I think for the most part, we've repaired that, where I don't know many people that offer abstinence supported treatment that don't support all pathways to recovery. But we still got work to do there. But you know, the other day, this leader in the healthcare industry and Interior Health publicly went on the news, mm-hmm. saying addiction treatment's ineffective. It shouldn't be offered. It's stigmatizing and just all this nasty stuff, and it's ineffective. And Interior Health will not be encouraging people to participate in bed-based services.
Why would he even
like
want to say that?
I'm just baffled, you know. Yeah. I obviously I got right behind as soon as you post. I think I was third person posting on it. Stop.
Can you imagine if she would have said Insight is ineffective and we shouldn't offer it as a solution to overdoses? Ooh. She'd be fired in a second,
right?
But because she said, you know, treatment doesn't work, it's like it's become the new norm. And we can't let that happen. So if you've been to treatment, if your loved one's been to treatment, we can't let this happen. Like, it's because if she says it, someone else is going to say it, and it becomes the norm. And it's finally out, this negative, like, darkness that's in addiction healthcare, because everything works. And you know what? I come from a place, if you want to be on safe supply in an SRO for the rest of your life, you know what? Go ahead. But if you want to get clean, you shouldn't be walking into an employee of a health authority that says, hey, treatment doesn't work, go back to your SRO. That's what this is about. So think about it. Like it's a big issue. When I went to treatment, you know, years ago, the doors open and people told me treatment was, you know, a good option. And now we're slowly going into this place where people are saying treatment doesn't work. So if that's not a red flag, I don't know what is. And please sign the petition. It's a big deal. There's everything in there on what we want. And
Yeah, the petition was actually put in the comments. So thank you so much. And we've had people saying, whoa, I went to treatment. It saved my life. Like, it changes people's life. It saves people's life. I wish I went to treatment sometimes because you just get a break. Like, there's a lot of ways to recover, but sometimes you really need that time to yourself. Like, a bed-based treatment, I think, is a beautiful thing to offer. I don't even understand why someone would bother saying something like that. Like, is it money or...
Yeah. Follow the money trail, I'm sure, because I mean, I'm not one that went to actual treatment, residential treatment. I wish. I look at women that go now or anybody that goes, I'm just like, take the time. I can't even remember what it was like my first year. I mean, 3 months or 30 days, I promise you, you're not going to remember, but you will remember all the joys and the fun that comes from that work you're doing right now. But whatever pathway that you choose is really just important that you're choosing a pathway, period. You know, where you're going to end up, we don't know. That's going to be your personal journey. But to have anybody, especially in a public figure like that, to come out publicly and deny an access or a route for somebody to take is just, we've got to stop it. So please, anybody that's out there, please go to the petition, sign it.
I don't know about you too, but like when I was in active addiction, I would use any excuse to not get help. So that's kind of giving permission to these people that need help to be like, oh, well, it doesn't work. I'm not even going to try, right? Like, that's just such a weird message to want to have out there.
It is.
And I mean, I've been guilty myself, you know, that natural bias that occurs from what I went through and what worked for me is like what everybody's got to do. And it's just sad. Like when I think and look at Recovery Day and 150 different forms of resources, like why each one of those resources, everything available, isn't like just asking a few questions to the individual that approaches them, like, you know, what do you want? And, you know, what's your life like right now? Okay, well, maybe you need to go talk to those guys, you know, down the road there, a few spots over. Like, it's just like, no, don't go see them. They don't work. We're the thing that works. That's got to stop.
It's got to stop because nobody, I mean, I've been in long-term recovery and I'm telling, I'm not the same person I was even 2 years ago. I'm picking up things. I'm coming out loud with my recovery, kind of throwing anonymous out the frickin' door. But, you know, we don't know where that person's going to be led to. This is a lifetime walk that we take being in recovery, healing from mental health and addiction issues. So if that's where my first step is, whatever that pathway is, or whoever you are out there, let's embrace that and support them. You don't know if they're going to all of a sudden come on your side of the bench one day. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, maybe they'll go over here. But the fact that someone's actually taking efforts, we need to support that. We need to embrace them. Whatever pathway you're at, let's love, let's just support. That's what this is. That's what you guys are doing. That's why I'm telling you, Just for 24, the heart of what we're doing here is married with Recovery Days, because that's including all pathways here. You're not discluded. This is a family. We don't care where you've come from, what you're doing. If you're an ally, supporter, we want you. And this is how we're going to grow. We got to work together with each community to bond. Definitely. I'm gonna get off my soapbox now.
I know. I mean, I'm not disillusioned enough to think that, you know, because I don't drink or use, that, you know, this problem isn't gonna occur with my kids. Like, it's not just a being around using that creates an addict. Like, it's you know, a disconnection. It's depression. It's not knowing yourself. It's so many things. And to think that one day, whatever the issue is, but let's just say the most problematic thing is a substance, that the only first and only option at that point is a safer supply or a safe place to use that drug, period. Yeah. And it stops there. Like, no way. Like, I want my kids, I want them, our next generation, to be met with where they're at, given safe supply, if that's going to slow their chaotic life down a little bit, but then, you know, reassess and meet them again and say, is there anything more now that you could use, or any other options that you think you would succeed at? Like, let's give our citizens everything. And to think that people in our government are are seeing that and only this. Yeah,
it's crazy. Even the 12 step community, I mean, they're like, 12 steps the only way. Well, I don't know about you, I've been 12 step, and yeah. It wasn't just 12 step. I did a lot of other stuff. I had years Absolutely. Of counseling and outside issues, so you know. And
yeah,
and
we've gone from do the steps or die to do harm reduction or die, and mm-hmm. the pendulum has just gone, and we need to like go back in the middle, and it's just do what you want to do, we'll help mm-hmm. you do it. I mean, I believe in motivational interviewing. We shouldn't make that illegal. It's like, if you're coming to a service and you want help, obviously there's going to be some motivational interviewing going on and suggestions. And if you don't want to do any of that, then go somewhere else, you know? And, but what we're doing is we've got these, should I be nice, Darren?
Well, actually, you want to know something?
Do we got people that are trying to put us all into one box in this multifaceted disease that needs multiple approaches? We can't fit in this box. Like this is what this place does. This is what that place does. And just make sure that people can transition from those pathways. That's how they do it in Portugal, and they've done a really good job of it. We've mm-hmm. been telling this to the former Minister of Health, you know, forever, and it just seems like nobody can come up with a way that all pathways are respected, and that's why we're in an overdose crisis. Can you imagine a mom who's never been to has no uncle that's in AA, like just a mom who's like completely, you know, like my kid's smoking heroin. Like she goes to Google and she sees this ad and it's like, oh, treatment doesn't work.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that, because honestly, this whole day, as you know, last year, Giuseppe, and thank you for coming again. You're our heart. I'm just so grateful that you helped us close the show. But talking about everything that we're talking about, this is a lethal issue. There is an opiate crisis. There's a suicide crisis. There's a mental health crisis, and people are dying. Just for 24 is also all about memory of the people that are left. And we're going to take a moment of silence now of 1 minute to remember all those ones that have lost the battle and the families that are left with the grieving. So can we take 1 minute, please, now? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
A long minute to think of the people, you know.
Okay, let's change. This event really is about having fun and showing people that recovery is not boring, sober is not boring, that you don't need a substance to make you anything. Like, healing is there. Let's bring the vibe up a little bit. So what are you guys doing? What are you offering that help people connect and find joy in recovery? I know Recovery Days is one of those things. What can people do to kind of get connected and have fun, especially in a pandemic? Either one.
Oh, you're muted, Giuseppe.
About that? There we go. You know, it's amazing what you can do online. You know, you can join meetings anywhere in the world, you know, even join meetings that kind of don't even speak English. And oh, there we go. We got some bubbles, blow bubbles in your house. But definitely staying connected with people. Like, don't use COVID as an excuse to not be connected with people, whether virtually and you know, we have all got our own bubbles and all that kind of stuff. Bubbles. It is a bubble. Yeah. We've all got our own bubbles of people that we hang out with, but to be honest with you, it's like, have a purpose. Like, having just a job and having just bills is not, you know, I mean, it's obviously have that, but like, I tell people, you know, you have to have purpose. Like, I've spent, you know, so many hours, it's not my job to do a petition. but you have this avenue. What are you going to do with it? And some of us put on events like you see, but some of us just, you know, answer the phone and help somebody. And it's all just equally as important and everything. And sometimes I'm not able to do some things because I've got other chaotic things happening, but, you know, I get inspired by watching somebody just talking to a new guy, telling him it's going to be okay. You know, and being there in the conversation, like that's what recovery taught me. Before I got to recovery, like I don't know about you guys, but like I you couldn't rely on me. Let's put it that way. You know, I had my stuff together, but you couldn't rely on me when it came to heart. And now I try my best. I mean, I make mistakes. I'm not perfect. But I've got people, I bring things up for review. And I was talking to a reporter this morning from the Vancouver Sun, and it was just a really crazy morning with this petition thing. And I just I'm like, am I being crazy? You know, I'm like talking to this reporter and she's just on the other line. She starts chuckling and she's like, you know, because I don't want to end up, and I'll say this, I don't want to end up being one of those God hates fags guys with a sign next to the pride parade against what everyone's doing. But I'm just like, am I insane? Like the emperor's not wearing any clothes. Like this woman said this, like, this is crazy. And it is a big deal. And you know what? That's one thing I learned, and then I'll let some others talk. Make everything a big deal. Mm-hmm. Everything a big deal. Everything a big deal. You know, someone's birthday, somebody's having a kid, you have a nephew, like make it all a big deal. Because I didn't make those things big deals. I made one thing a big deal. That was buying dope. And now I try to make everything else a big deal. So that's how you have fun. And it just happens, because you never know by participating where you're gonna be. And when you participate, you'd like have fun. So if you just stay home and kind of wallow as a victim, oh, COVID, I can't do anything. Well, nothing's fun gonna happen. So try to participate in things virtually on the phone, and when we can do it in person.
So amazing.
I think sometimes it's like, I sit, you know, and I hear something like this and I'm going to drive to Penticton, and you know what I mean? Because there's this feeling of like, got to do something. But then part of me goes, but Giuseppe's going to do the thing. So I'll just wait for him. But then I think a lot of us, I mean, I come from a place of seeing where the problem is, never mind my business. And not being somebody that, like I said, that preaches the hill that I'm standing on as right and the only way. That, I mean, I've spent a lot of time not having a career or a 9-to-5 to sort of feed that purpose in my life, and you know, question a lot, like who am I? Because people often ask, what do you do? You know, I mean, I raise kids. Yeah, like. That's kind of a big deal, but
that's a huge deal.
You know, huge. More than that, it's knowing how much I can actually influence positivity, and whether I feel like I'm a nice person or I'm doing it just to feel better. I'm doing it because I'm in a program. That is my purpose. When I step out the door, when I'm in my car, I'm looking for people to let in, to you know, they're just sitting there waiting to be let in, like waiting for the space to occur. Let them in, like just smiling at people and beginning conversations. Like it's too much to think that we're stuck at home and this, you know, this weird way of life that we're growing accustomed to, but we're becoming depressed, we're becoming suicidal, we're becoming aggressive. And I just know that anytime I leave my house, I have opportunities galore, whether it's picking up trash and like down the street. Like I'm not the person that's going to look at a problem and think that's not mine anymore. Whether it's a piece of trash or a person struggling, like nodding off on the park bench. Like I'm uncomfortable sometimes and I don't want to do it. This is the point of my life, that why I'm clean, why I'm here now, isn't just to raise kids. It's to like raise, you know, some energy no matter where I go. And it's part of our show, and it's, you know, it's part of the program, and it's part of life. But I mean, it's part of so much. Like there's people right here on this show watching this, like I said, that, you know, might not need to do what I did, right? But there's people in my life right now that hit a wall. They question themselves. And I was someone, because I shared who I was and what I went through, that they just chatted with. And I didn't convert them, you know, but they made enough change in their life by reaching out themselves. And it's them. They did it, right? So if this invokes anybody to just go to someone and start that conversation, then it's enough. And that's the vehicle I want to be, is just the available one.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this has been so amazing. Thank you guys so much for coming here. We're just about to close up the show and do some of our last giveaways, so stick around if you're in the comments, but we're gonna let you guys go. And
thank you,
this was just such a great day.
Thanks for having us.
Just awesome. Keep being the light, Giuseppe. I know the battles, I mean, what we went through this week, we'll probably talk about that in a podcast later, but I'm telling you, the enemy doesn't want these messages out. So again, as we've said last year, keep going, please.
And sign the petition, recoverydaybc.ca, and see you at our events, hopefully. Yeah. Take care, everyone, and happy 424.
Woo! Yeah!